Hi guys, welcome to the Paddler's Playbook, a kayak fishing experience, brought to you by Austin Canoe and Kayak and Real Sportswear. Today, the guys are joined by Jeff and Ryan from Kayak Bass Nation to discuss the top 5 bass kayaks, top 5 yak accessories, and top 5 travel destinations. That's right, the boys are going freshwater today, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Lewis. And this is going to be a top 5 edition of the Paddler's Playbook. Chris, I'm glad that we have some people coming on for this episode, because today we are going to talk about the top 5 bass fishing kayaks. And
Bass yakking.
And you know, I target bass about as much as I target salad, and that is not very often. So this is going to be a fun episode, guys. I'm just going to sit back and drink some Bravazzi and ask some follow-up questions. I'm not going to have a lot of input. I didn't even make a top 5 list because I didn't want to sit here and fake the funk and act like I knew what I was talking about when it came to bass fishing kayaks. So we have some experts coming on to talk a little bit about bass fishing kayaks.
There's a few things I can actually speculate that we're going to talk about. And those few things are storage, and possibly storage. Knowing those bass guys, you know, those glitter boats tend to hold like 40 and 50 rods.
Yeah, and I'm guessing there's going to be a little bit of talk about the ease of use with electronics. But I've never had any electronics on my kayak, so I have no clue.
I want to ask these guys if video game fishing is getting popular in kayaking. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
What do you mean?
Oh man, so it's a real thing, and it's called video game fishing. Okay, these guys are setting up electronics in such a way that they can literally see the fish. Okay, it's right there by this rock structure, and I'm going to throw my jig, you know, in this direction. And then they see their jig and where it landed and how far it was away from the fish. And they're looking at the screen the whole time, like this 12-inch screen, right? And they're like, okay, now I need to make my cast, you know, just, you know, 15 feet to the right. And so they cast, and then again, they see their jig on the screen, and they're like, okay, you know, this time I need to go ahead and move a little bit, you know, further back. It's crazy. It's like literally like video game fishing is what it is.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of that talk. But before we get into that talk, me and Chris, man, we actually got to do a little fishing together. We talked about it on the Facebook Live, but this is the first time. It's been probably over a year since we fished together, hasn't it?
It probably has been quite a long time. You know, it's not every day that I get to get out at the same time that you do, and you definitely have a difficult time with your drive all the way from Conroe. But man, I can't say that this was necessarily the best trip of my life, Drew.
It wasn't an awesome trip, but I mean, we got on a few fish, and by we, I mean me and Jessica got on a few fish.
And by you and Jessica, you mean just Jessica.
Yeah, and by me and Jessica, I mean Jessica got on some fish. I caught one that was 20 and a half inches, and I really didn't want to keep him because it was a baby, but he was gut hooked, man. He took that jig all the way down his gullet.
So my daughter caught 2 trout and a redfish and a gaff top while she was out there, which was, you know, and she was not fishing with bait. She was using soft plastics. But you saw how she did, man. Whenever she got there, as soon as we unloaded her kayak, she was gone. She was like, bye, see ya.
Yeah, she was gone before we even got our kayaks in the water.
Yeah,
for me and Jessica.
She already had a plan in mind, and she went and attacked that plan. And she said she saw plenty on the first shoreline that she went to, but she couldn't get them to commit. And you know, this was a condition that I constantly, you know, I make remarks about flood tides all the time, about how much I don't like to fish flood tides. And the conditions that we fished in were indeed a flood tide. Even after we had finished with the outgoing tide, the reefs in that area were still covered up. And usually on a normal tide, they're exposed. But you found a new fishing spot, man. And I'm glad that I was able to show that area to you. I think you need to get out there more often because it's just a super easy launch. And there's typically lots of fish in that area. Flood tides make it hard, though.
Man, I like those super easy launches. And the fact that I only had to paddle maybe 200 yards to where Jessica caught her first fish. And I thought it was funny that we got there and, you know, your daughter took off one way. She was gone. Michelle took off. She was gone. Jessica took off. She was gone. Like, and it was funny that Jessica caught the first fish on her second cast. And you were like, hey, you know, that's my second favorite spot right there. I like that spot. Yeah. There's a good reef right around there.
It's a huge reef.
Yeah, and she just got there, and that is straight where she went to. We didn't even talk about it. I didn't even tell her, you know, hey, why don't you go over here? She just got there. She paddled there, and that's where she was going to fish. And she actually said, and I know she's a little bit biased, but she's like, I would learn some stuff from the previous episodes that I've listened to from you guys, and I looked at it on Google Earth, and I decided that's where I wanted to go. That's why I didn't even need to ask you. So it made me feel kind of proud a little bit that she was catching fish like that.
So the great thing about it was it's a point, okay? It's a very prominent point that joins a couple lakes off of a cut, and it has a large shell reef that covers the area. Drew, I'm going to say that reef is probably, it comes off of the point 20 to 25 yards, and it's probably 30 to 40 yards wide. So it's almost as deep as it is long, and it's just, she picked a perfect spot. You saw where I went. I usually go, first thing I do is I go hit those drains on the outgoing tide, and I can usually find a couple along the grass lines of those drains, but she got them, man. She got on them, and she got on them quick. And we weren't out there long. We weren't out there for a full day. We just went out there for the morning, a couple hours. It was good to get out. I needed to do a little more yakking myself.
Yeah, it was nice, and it was an 8 a.m. launch, so I was okay with that. We all launched at 8 a.m. because I asked Chris, I said, what time do you want to launch? Because we may just meet you out there. And he said, about 7:30. So that ended up perfect because that meant I didn't have to leave the house till 5:30. So
I missed my sunrise, but that's okay.
Yep. So speaking of Jesse, you know, Jesse, what do we have going on with our partners over there at ACK and Real Sportswear?
Hey, guys, let's talk sales. More importantly, sales you don't have to get off the couch to get in on. Real Sportswear is having an online warehouse sale. That's right, save 50 to 60% off select styles. These aren't your markup to markdown savings either. Listen, Brostaff, I went on there and I scored a $40 shirt for 20 bucks. So the savings are real. The people over at Real Sportswear, they want to make sure you have ample time to take advantage of these deep discounts. So they'll be available to you until tonight, Labor Day, 9/7/20. So get in there and wear what the guides wear. That's realsportswear.com. R-E-E-L sportswear.com. And cash in on your savings today. Don't forget to download the app for additional savings. Next up on the list of savings, BroStaff, is our friends over at ACK. Jump on over to AustinKayak.com and get registered for their $500 gear pack giveaway. And while you're at it, use your BroStaff code, TPP15, to save on a new Astral PDF or an Aquabound paddle. There's always something new to drool over at AustinKayak.com. Again, don't forget to get that sweet, sweet 15% discount with the BroStaff code, TPP15. That's it for me, BroStaff. I'll catch you next time on the salt side.
Hey, Jess, thanks for all the information. I know that ACK is loading up their stores just as fast as they possibly can with all the goodies for all of our kayakers out there. Look, today we've got two very special guests, and they're going to blow the world up with their Bass Nation info. Don't be giggling over there, guys. Look, we've got Jeff. It's Jeff Malo, right?
Malo. It's Malo tonight.
Jeff Malo. Jeff Mallet. Jeff, how you say your last name?
Malo. Malo.
Every which way you want to. Malot's the proper pronunciation. That's all right.
It's a lot of Malot.
It's all right. Jeff.
Yo, it's check this Jeff. Out. Jeff is the founder of the Natural State Kayakers, and he's a pro staffer for Old Town. He's originally from Ohio, and he's currently living in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Y'all give it up for Jeff. We've got Ryan Lambert here. Ryan is the founder of the Tennessee Valley Kayak Anglers, and he works with the Dugout Bait and Tackle Company. All right. Tell us a little bit about the Dugout. What's going on at the Dugout?
Man, everything is going on at the Dugout. So it's owned by Jamie Koza. Jamie he's been around the bass boat tournament scene for a long time. He's a huge distributor of Shimano and St. Croix rods. His daughter is on a college fishing team. His son's on a high school fishing team. Like their
college
whole life
fishing
revolves
team?
Around fishing. Oh yeah, man. You ain't heard of that?
Man, down here in Texas, I don't know. We have tried so often to get collegiate and even high school fishing teams together, and for some reason it just falls apart. But I know it's a little bit different atmosphere in Tennessee, and especially in bass fishing as well.
Yeah, man, there's several. Most of the bigger universities have a college fishing team. Yeah. Like Auburn, Jordan Lee. I'm sure you've heard of Jordan Lee, MLF, you know, champ like that. He was Auburn's big stick when he was in college.
Yeah, over here these days, man, they're throwing covers on tables and having signings like it's a college football player for the high school fishermen in Arkansas in this area.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's nuts, man. So, Jeff, Ohio, huh?
Born and raised, man.
So what brings you to – What brings you south of the Mason-Dixon line?
I'm from here now, though. I've been in Arkansas longer than I lived in Ohio. I've been in Arkansas 20 years. I say y'all and fixing and all that stuff, so I'm from here now. But I was in the military, got out of the military. My wife's from Arkansas, so we came back here to be close to her parents, and we've been here ever since. So,
you know, my wife is from Ohio. She's from Cuyahoga.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that area or not. It's actually near Akron.
Yeah,
we vacation there during the summers. We go hang out on Lake Erie. Man, you know what? That's the only place that I ever use live bait, Drew. And they have this weird ass looking fish there. I don't know what they call them.
Smallmouth.
Bass. Yeah. They're gobies, I think.
Yeah, gobies, man.
Go.
Smallmouth snack is what that is.
I tell you what, man, you put one of those on your line, toss it out, and it's like boom, there you go. It's the fight's on. But I still have not been able to catch any walleye or any thing other than some smallmouth, and what they call there is sheep's head, but they're just freshwater drum. But I really like Ohio, man. Ohio is a cool place.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I appreciate the love. There's some parts of Ohio that are okay still, but I like Arkansas. I like Arkansas a lot.
Awesome. Well, you guys know how Chris likes to talk about. I like to drag stuff on a little bit with these shows, but Chris is actually the one that likes to drag stuff on. But today on this show, the reason we have Ryan and Jeff joining us is we're going to talk about some bass kayaks. This is going to be the top five episode. We're going to do top five bass kayaks. We're going to do top five yak accessories. Then we're going to talk about our top five travel destinations. But before we get to that portion, why don't you guys tell us about your podcast? You guys are going live every week. You have your podcast, Kayak Bass Nation. How did that show start? You know, how did you guys get into the podcast biz? And just tell us a little bit about your show.
Ryan, you want to take that? Or you want me to take it first?
You go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll tell you how our page started and the podcast kind of spawned from the page. How about that?
That sounds good.
Yeah. So, you know, fishing, namely competitive kayak fishing, there's a lot of opinions out there in that sport or any sport where there's competition involved. With kayak fishing early on, it's still really early on, but over the last few years, opinions weren't exactly welcomed in the larger kayak competitive kayak fishing groups or organizations. Myself, Ryan, you know, a handful of other guys, we don't mind sharing our opinion. That wasn't received too well. So we figured people needed a place to be able to do that. And that's how the Kayak Bass Nation group got off the ground, was we wanted a place to be able to openly share opinions on any topic, even if it hurt your feelings a little bit. Sometimes it does, I guess. But, you know, there's no real mean intent, but it's just a place where we can get things out there. I mean, there's a lot of nonsense that goes on, too, but that's all part of the fun of it over there on the actual group page. Now, the fan page and the website, we do a power rankings thing with that. That's a lot of fun. It's, you know, somewhat controversial as well, I guess, but it's a lot of fun to mess with. And with the growth of the page over a couple of years, you know, we ended up with, 10,000 members in the group page now and, you know, several thousand followers on the Facebook page. We decided to start a podcast. You know, Facebook Live became a thing, and we said, you know what, let's try this thing. And we've limped along and tried about 5 different software versions and you know, stuck with it, made it happen. It's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I like how you said you're very opinionated. So I've listened to a few of the podcasts, and I think my favorite was when you guys had on EJ, Sir Jackson. Yeah, I think that one was my favorite. Because
you're talking, dude, about, you're stealing my thunder, brother. Don't go there.
You're talking about opinions and people have being opinionated. I'll give it to you. You guys gave him a good 30 minutes of letting him roll with it and talk about it and feel really good about it. And then you were like, but here's the problem. Here's the problem I see with that. So
there was some good television in the middle there. There was some good stuff.
No, there
I got a little heated. I felt my face get red, man. I can only sit and listen to that shit for so long before I have to tell the truth.
I could tell it was bothering you because when he started talking about there's a market for it, and then that's where I could see, like, I could physically hear the steam coming out of your ears whenever he was talking about how there's a market.
But it's got neodymium magnets, man.
Yeah, the magnets.
That's good.
And it has a chair. It has a chair that looks like it was at a, you know, those big orange chairs that were in your desk when you were in high school. That's what that chair looks like on that thing.
But it was inspired by a fighter jet.
Sell the hell out of them, you know. Maybe there is some unforeseen. I mean, there's aliens apparently, and we didn't think those were here. So maybe there's a market for this $12,000 carbon fiber kayak. Who knows? But I mean, I think if you are just gonna go through life pretending like you're gonna be successful at everything with no real proof to back it up, it's probably time to step back and take a look at the bigger picture.
I just don't think that there may be a market out there, but I don't know anybody that I want to sit down and have a beer with that's going to buy a $11,000-$12,000 kayak. That just isn't the type of people that listen to my podcast or hang out with us.
Look at the hell people get for buying PAs.
That's true, man. You know, souping up a PA, just imagine one of those souped up with a 32-inch TV on the front.
Twice as much as the nicest PA on a boat that you still have to paddle. How amazing is that?
With a trunk.
The old hatchback. I think Elon Musk will probably buy one just to pull behind his Tesla truck. I think those two, like, that would be a good pair. Like, if you get a whatever it's going to be called, Apex with a Tesla truck, buy one, get one.
That would be awesome. They probably wouldn't be at the same launches that we're at. That's all I'm saying.
No, it'd be a country club, private country club launch.
There you go. Chris, did you even make a list for this? Did you make a top 5 list?
I'm going to hit it at number 1.
Okay, I'll let you hit it at number 1. But I didn't even make a list for this because I didn't want to fake the funk for you guys and act like I knew what the hell I'm talking about, because I do not know what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to bass fishing kayaks.
Not seriously anyway. I mean, we can get out there and we can bass around. For sure, man. You can bass around in anything. When it comes to serious competitive bass fishing, I think it's a completely different world. And one thing that I was talking to Drew about before you guys jumped on was video game fishing. Have y'all heard of that?
Video? You talking about like as a metaphor for using your depth finder? Or are you talking about
exactly?
Like
video games? Yeah. Exactly.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
See, they've heard of it. These guys out there with like dual and triple 12-inch screens on the front, on the bow, and the stern, and I mean just everywhere, so that they can video game fish.
Yeah, that's not me.
So anyway, bass fishing is a completely different monster than what we're used to down here. And whenever you start competitive bass fishing, especially from a kayak, it's a whole nother world. So you guys are going to tell us all about it.
Yeah, tell us about this whole other world. So Jeff, let's start with you, and this is going to work just like any other top five episode that we do. We're going to start at number five, and we're going to bounce back and forth between the guests. They're going to give us their five, then their four, three, two, one, et cetera, and we're just going to go back and forth. So, Jeff, what is your number five top bass fishing kayak? And tell us a little bit why.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to sound like a homer when I get to some of this list, but to me, there's two companies that really are head and shoulders above the rest right now, and as far as quality, and you'll hear that throughout my list. But I'll start number five with Hobie Outback. I've demoed Hobie Outbacks. I think that, you know, they're versatile boats. They're fast. They're, you know, underrated as stable for, you know, a narrower, smaller boat. I haven't ever fished out of one, but I've been in them at several demo days. So I put that one right there.
The new Hobie Outback, right?
Yeah.
Now, without giving up any of your four through one, why wasn't the Outback higher up on your list? What are some cons of the Outback? Because the Outback is one of the top-rated inshore kayaks for down here, and it also made, I think, our top three on the offshore kayaks. Why isn't it higher on your list for bass fishing?
For bass fishing, just from sheer size and the amount of stuff it can carry. I like to, you know, I'm rating these somewhat based off, you know, obviously it's my opinion, but I like to carry a lot of stuff, and I know a lot of bass anglers like to carry a lot of gear with them. Just can't carry as much as the others.
Yeah, it's going to be everybody. This is going to be a bias. All these top fives are biased, but if you have enough experience, you have a reason to be biased. So with the experience of bass fishing and with the experience that a lot of us have, we can have our biases and we can stick by them. And a lot of the times we're going to be right if you fish the same type of fishing that we do. Me and Chris, we do a lot of inshore fishing, but Chris does a totally different type of fishing than I do. Now, when you're out there fishing, what is your favorite, you know, your favorite tactics as far as how do you like to fish?
For me, I like flipping and pitching a jig or a Texas rig, looking at, you know, throwing at targets shallow. So that's another reason with the size of the boats, I'm going to be stable so I can stand up, be able to be accurate with my cast and flip and pitch and stuff.
Dude, that could almost be a country song. Flipping and pitching a jig flipping with my Texas rig?
Probably is.
Man.
Addison Johnson needs to get on that. He's a country singer that fishes with us.
There you go. All right, Ryan, what is your number five? And then tell us a little bit about your style of fishing.
So my number five is my former boat that I fished out of the past couple of years, the Native Titan 12. It is in the number five spot because I really like the layout of the boat, the stability. To me, it's more stable than even a pro angler. But where it kind of lacked was they had some issues with water intrusion into the hull. I think it was a leaky back hatch, and it just went on for a couple years and never got fixed. The steering, like you needed to do, like buy a Burley Pro steering kit, you know, something aftermarket. Like there were some boxes that could have been checked with that. But it had a lot of storage. It had horizontal rod storage. It had under seat storage for tackle trays. That, you know, that part of it was well thought out, and that's what made it a good fishing platform for me. I just think there were some areas that should have been improved or could have been improved. That's why it's number five. My style of fishing is I like fishing grass mostly. So I will either, as Jeff said, drag a Texas rig real slow. My style, I don't necessarily fish shallow. I like grass edges in 6 to 12 feet of water. I like throwing a chatterbait. I like the movement. I like the reaction bite. I like them to come out and crush it. That's my favorite bite if I can find it.
Yeah, and you're talking about the rudder and stuff. I never understood that about Native. You know, since the Slayer Propel was out, before the Titan even came out, either a Boondocks or a Burley Pro upgrade changed the dynamic of that thing so much. They had a good 4 or 5 years to improve on that rudder system, and I don't understand why they didn't improve upon it.
So the handling improved on the Titan as far as turn radius. They allowed on that original Slayer, that rudder would barely
get it left and right.
On the Titan, yeah. It would turn all the way around, and the flat back of the Titan, it would make the boat actually turn, but it killed the tracking because you just had this big, wide kind of, you know, flat ass on this kayak. So, you know, that made it track poorly. And then the steering components are plastic. And the more stress you put on it, especially going to that, you know, the cord that they did away from the metal cable, that put even more stress on the handle steering components. And, if you're going to upgrade one thing, you have to upgrade the other to make sure it's going to hold up to the abuse. And that was one of the biggest issues that they had with that.
Now, I don't know if this will ruin any more on your top five, but what do you think about them doing the Slayer Max and doing away with the skinnier stern on the Slayer? Because I really liked that boat because it paddled well. And when we're in really shallow water down here, I could paddle that Slayer before it was the Slayer Max a lot better than a lot of other pedal kayaks, which meant a lot to me fishing in 18 inches to 2 foot of water all the time when I had to pull my drive. You think that was a smart idea to go to the bigger back end? I mean, I know they had to have an answer for the Outback, but I don't know if that was the real answer.
So honestly, the Titan series really kind of crushed the Slayer series out, like choked them out, you know, sales wise. The Slayer 10 was probably the most popular boat that Native has ever had as far as numbers being purchased. That was that single model, not the whole Titan, not compared to the whole Titan series, but that singular size range. I think the Max had a lot of potential. You know, from the design board, what we came up with, we wanted stability, we wanted storage, and we wanted speed. So Chase Tanner and myself, we took these boats down to South Florida to film the commercial with Rob Will Valderay, and we paddled the boats at Fellsmere, which is a huge just grass mat, basically, just miles and miles of grass. So you can't use your pedal drive. Now you can't use that pedal drive. So we paddled for hours. We were out there for like 13 hours that day. So we got a lot of paddling experience on it. I don't know that that was the wrong move to replace that if it were done properly. So we reached out with feedback from that initial filming, and we told them like, hey, we're getting water in the boat somewhere. And I think it was the front hatch seal itself. So we're getting water inside the hull. The steering, again, same steering components, the steering needed fixed, and the floor was so low, you would get water. If you had the scuppers out, you would have a pool of water, like, where your feet go, and, like, those things are unacceptable. Like, you know, we just put a year and a half of design to come out with this. Why not do it right? You're doing something brand new. You're replacing an iconic boat like the Slayer, which was one of the first, you know, pedal drive kayaks to really make a splash on the market, you know, 5-6 years ago. So what, you know, why not do it right? I don't know. I think if they would have fixed the steering on the original Slayer, there wouldn't have been a need for a Slayer Max in the first place.
I love the redesign of the rear ends on those, man, especially looking at the Titans from the back. Man, it reminds
me of
that's
where the stability comes from.
I don't care about that. It reminds me of Mama with some big old hips. Just want, okay. Makes me want to dig my meat hooks in.
Where are you from originally?
Louisiana. Alabama. He's from Louisiana. Just wait till he starts talking about Sockelay.
I just left Louisiana about 3 hours ago.
All right, let's get to number four. Jeff, what you got for your number four?
Number four, it's had two names in the last year, but I'm going to go with what used to be the Old Town Topwater, now the Old Town Sportsman 120 and 106 PDLs. Solid pedal drive option for folks that are just trying to, I mean, you can use it as your tournament boat if you're an experienced tournament fisherman, but for somebody that's just getting into the sport, it's an affordable price point, easy to carry around, especially that 106. It's, you know, you can car top it, throw it back your truck real easy. My buddy Garrett Morgan fishes out of one of those just because of how portable it is. He can throw it in the back of his truck and move spots throughout the day. It's got an open deck. Pedal drive is no maintenance on both, you know, all the Old Town pedal kayaks. There's no maintenance, sealed gears, 5-year warranty on the drive. Just solid little boats. So, yeah, number four, Sportsman PDL.
I am looking forward to adding that kayak to my fleet. I really am. One of these days I'll have one.
Yeah, I had a 106 topwater for a while. Really liked it. I'm a tall guy, and I was still able to fish comfortable out of it. Recently got rid of it to make room for another one that's going to be on my list here shortly.
Now, you said about the sealed bearings, and you said how sealed that drive is. Do you think there's anything else that is keeping that drive out of the shop and being worked on? Because we had Rico from ACK on our show, and he was just talking about he never sees those Old Town drives back into be worked on. Is it just superior parts? I mean, is it just being sealed? What makes that Old Town drive so sturdy?
It's not perfect because we get the pictures of stuff that falls apart sometimes. but overall, yes, it is a tank. I've beat the crap out of mine, and it holds up. And I mean, people forget Old Town is Johnson Outdoors. They've got Minkota behind them, so they've got all the research that they need, behind them to develop this stuff. And it's really, it just seems like recently, the last few years, Johnson Outdoors has gotten really serious about the kayak side of things and really started trying to innovate a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And if they would quit changing the names, we could remember what to call everything instead of a topwater and a sportsman and a predator, Sportsman XL and everything else they got going on.
A lot of us said something about that when that happened this year at the Classic. And, the idea behind it is branding. They want it to be all kind of, one brand, the Sportsman line. And I get that. So it'll take a little bit to get used to. So hopefully they stick with that for a while.
All right, Ryan, what is your number four?
It's whatever Jeff wants to call the Old Town PDL. I don't know if it's Predator now or whatever it changed into. What's the newest name for what the Predator was, Jeff?
The Big Water. Sportsman Big Water.
Shoot. All right, so the Big Water. Now, I think that's, it's a big stable platform for tournament fishing. One of the things that really knocks me with Old Town, and Jeff and I discuss this frequently, is the storage. I would like to see like more incorporated storage, like horizontal rod storage, that kind of stuff. That's what has it down at number four on my list. The drive, I think, is great. They've had great success with that drive. It's probably the best, most durable propeller drive on the market. You see it used in offshore, you see it used freshwater bass fishing. I mean, I think it has a lot of applications, but that for me, that's what kind of knocks it down to the number four. It's just
now,
the storage.
I haven't really looked at the Sportsman, but is the Sportsman going to still have a lot of those mounting plates that are on there? Because it had like six mounting plates, but it didn't have a whole lot of rails there in the front. Do you guys like having the mounting plates compared to a lot of rail system?
The new plates have tracks built into them.
Okay. Well, that answers that question. That's the best of both worlds then, because you can drill into those plates or you can mount it yourself on the track system.
That is one cool thing about the Predator / Big Water is every boat I bought, I've just switched the plates. Instead of having to redo all my accessories, re-drill, I just take the plates off the new one and slap them on the old one and sell it.
That's good. And you didn't try to sell it with all your electronics on there and try to up the price by a bajillion dollars because you have, $50 worth of shit that you bought.
The only thing Drew really wants to know is, do you take foot pictures?
Pictures
of your feet.
If you guys have not listened to the podcast, it drives me nuts when you see pictures. And Hobie owners are the worst. They'll take pictures of their feet, their fish, and their feet will be in there because they ain't got no damn shoes on, and they don't take care of their damn toes. Or they're taking a picture of a fishing rod, and they're pointed down at their toes, and you can see their nasty feet. They don't clip their damn toenails. Looks like turkey jerky. That just drives me crazy, man. I
feel
hate
like
that.
You're talking specifically about Christine Fisher, right?
Yes.
Now.
Or Dusty Acker with his long big toe.
Oh, God. So that's two opposite ends of the spectrum. One of those is really suspect on the feet. And I'll let you figure out which one.
I'm not going to investigate. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, go over to KBN. Go over to KBN and just search the group page for
feet. Your toes.
Feet? Okay.
There's some threads. There's some threads on that.
All right, so I'm not the only one. The only one. They got them pterodactyl toes, them Cheeto toes. Them old nasty things.
Oh, nails look like dip-sized Fritos.
That's disgusting. All right, Jeff, let's get to your number three, man.
So number three, I'm going to come in with what I'm going to guess is probably going to be Ryan's number one, which is a Hobie PA, the 12 or the 14. I've once again, I've not fished out of a PA, but I've been in one many a time at demo days and just in buddies. It's, you know, it's solid boat. I mean, I don't know really how to compare it to fishing out of it because I haven't, but being in it, it's very stable. The horizontal rod storage is the thing that, as an Old Town guy, that we keep hammering away at Old Town, of one thing we like out of that, whether it's Hobie or another brand that has horizontal rod storage, is to incorporate that somehow. So that's a real plus. You know, the boat is stable, but I think Ryan and I even talked about this. It's kind of a different stable. There's a secondary stability to it as it starts to go that you got to get used to, and you know, it doesn't catch right away. You know, so very comfortable platform. I can't argue with the success. So many people have them. The fins, the new 360 drive with the kick up fins. I mean, that stuff is unbelievable. So, you know, I saw Ryan put a few places up on the river. You just can't argue with the kind of platform that it is.
Now, with the Hobie, since we're talking about the PA here, and we've already hit on the Old Town, and we've hit on the natives, how important is that instant reverse that you can get with the propeller type drives? And I haven't been in the 360, so I don't know if you can quickly get into reverse on that 360 or not. But how important is that for bass fishermen out there that like to flip docks and things like that? Is it as important as some people like to make us think that instant reverse is important for bass fishing?
I think it is. That's why I love a prop drive. But where I fish, and a lot of people around here fish, we don't have grass. We fish deep water, rocks. So, you know, getting it tangled up and stuff is not really an issue. I like that instant reverse. I like to be able to stand up. I fish standing up half the time, and I can just lean over, hit the pedal with my hand, back up. That kind of stuff is why I like the prop.
Ryan, have you been in the 360?
Got it sitting in the garage right now.
Can you kick it into reverse fairly quickly, or have you tried or needed to?
In a couple seconds. I mean, it's like, that's it. It's in reverse. The maneuverability of that 360 is insane. And I honestly, I mean it when I say I tried to talk myself out of getting that boat. I didn't want to. I didn't want to like it. I didn't want to admit that there was a need for it. You know, I left Native at the end of last year, and I was like, I'm going to look at everything and kind of weigh out the options and decide what I want to go with. So AJ McWhorter, he got me a regular PA-12 with a 180 drive and a couple 360s to test out. I tested out the 360 first in a tournament, and I didn't really grasp how to use everything, because those Hobies, man, they've got like four or five different rip cords and all kinds of stuff in there. I couldn't figure out, like, day one. I mean, I couldn't really figure out what I was doing. So I fished a little more out of it, and I kept that PA-12 for a while with the 180 drive, and I got sick of pulling the cord to go into reverse. Like, that's something that frustrated me, especially fighting a fish, if the wind were blowing, if you were in current. So I made the decision that I wanted to go with a 360. So I got a PA-14 360. I've had it for, I don't know, about 5 months now, I guess. And I have beat the life out of it. Like, I mean, I've taken it down the Susquehanna River, which is like 2 feet deep at, you know, max, and it's solid rock. Just beat the drive up, beat the kick up fins. I'm really happy with it. I don't miss my prop drive at all.
You sound like Chris when you're talking about beating the shit out of the fins and beating the stuff, because I've seen Chris use the fins and stuff as an anchor while we're out there fishing and just stick them into the mud.
Posted a picture of my drive on Instagram after the Susquehanna tournament, and I mean they're like gouges, like cuts into the drive itself from the rocks. That it got hammered bad.
You can use those the Hobie Mirage drive. Let's say worst case scenario, you bend a mast so bad that you have to go ahead and take it off for the drive to function. The drive will function with just one fin.
Yeah.
It's an amazing feat of engineering. I love it. Yeah, I beat the shit out of mine. I still have my very first drive, and I use it rather than using the 180. I can't stand the 180 drive.
Those would be just like the Pelican drives, right?
it's the GT like actually. The so it's actually got bearings in it versus the it's one up from the Pelican drive.
My number three is the Old Town Autopilot. Similar reasoning for it being number three is the storage. I was so excited when I heard that this boat was coming out just because of the integrations that it had, you know, with the trolling motor. The Minn Kota trolling motor talking to the Humminbird unit, like, you know, one big technology package. I was really hyped up about that. Then, you know, it came out. I don't know why you would put out a boat without horizontal rod storage. Like, if you're trying to build like the baddest bass fishing boat, especially, put horizontal rod storage on it. You got all the money. You see how successful it is in other brands. Throw that on there. And I wanted a bigger motor on it. I wanted that boat to be faster. And that's kind of what turned me off from it. Because in my head, it was either get that boat or get a 360. Like those were the
autopilot, two right? options.
Yeah, the autopilot. Yep.
So what does it come with?
What is that, Jeff? 35 or something?
When I get to my number two, I'll break it down for you.
Okay, He's gonna keep us in suspense. All right, so I got a question.
Close. Jeff and I are pretty close here on this one. I like it.
Yeah, so I have a question. You guys keep talking about horizontal rod holders. How many rods are you taking out on a tournament day? How much storage do you need? Because like, if I take out more than four rods, I feel like it's a damn clusterfuck, and I got stuff all around me everywhere. So how many rods are you taking out?
Four to six. Six is my absolute max. If you see me with six rods, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. If you see me with four, I'm about to catch some fish.
Yeah, I got issues with stuff. I take way too many. I've taken 12 before.
Oh.
Sometimes 14. I put three or four in the hole. I mean, it's just insane. Jeez, I don't even use a third of them, but it's like a security blanket that they're there in case I'm like,
oh boy.
I only fish with one crankbait all day long, but I got a box with 20 of them.
Yeah,
but you may break off 8 or 10. Like, that's a tricky thing about baits. I hope not.
If you got one, you got none.
All right, let's get to number two. Jeff, what you got?
Number two, I'm going to go right off what Ryan said at number three for him, is the Old Town Autopilot. I actually have that boat. I got it in early. I was able to do some demos on it before the release. Ryan did talk about some of the limitations it has. It doesn't have horizontal rod storage. It doesn't have a big front hatch you can put anything in. But the rear tank well is giant, and you can put a lot of stuff back there. Last time I went out, I carried two crates, a cooler, and a giant plastic box full of my soft plastics, all back there with room to spare. So it has a lot of rear storage. But the deal about it is it's a big, wide, stable platform, open deck, and then that Minn Kota trolling motor. That's everything. It's, you know, handheld, iPilot remote. It's got spot lock, directional heading, you know, just an unbelievably convenient platform to fish out of. If you get a lithium battery, I experienced the downfalls of trying to push a lead acid battery too far against the current on the Mississippi River. But the boats, it's a lot of fun to fish out of. I mean, you get kind of lazy out there. You get on a rock pile or something and hit spot lock and just sit there for an hour, you know, dragging a jig or something on a point or a rock pile. Makes fishing really easy.
So no doubt this is the way of the future. We see kayaks sort of moving in this direction. First, we saw them getting wider, more stable, larger, you know, capacity as far as weight's concerned. And then now we see them with more electronics. We see them with more options to motorize them. And it's becoming acceptable in kayak bass fishing as far as tournaments are concerned as well, right?
Yeah, a lot of organizations are allowing them. Local trails, some of them are starting to lean that way. I'm okay either way. I mean, if you're asking me, should you allow motors in tournaments anywhere, I would say no, even though I have a boat with a motor on it. But if you're going to allow them, I'm going to use the best one available.
You're going to use it. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And that's the autopilot, in my opinion. The only, you know, one of the drawbacks with it is Ryan, I think, mentioned speed. It's not very fast, although there's some upgrades you can do with the prop and different things to get a little more oomph behind it. But all kayaks are relatively slow when you think about it, and you know, in the grand scheme of things.
I've tried changing out props to try and get more speed out of a trolling motor. It just doesn't happen. It's kind of like an engine. There's no replacement for displacement. same thing with the trolling motor. If you want to go faster, you're going to have to bump up to a 55.
And your ultimate limitation is going to be hull speed. Like, you know, the drag on the water, that's your limit on that. You know, you could build a carbon fiber kayak that didn't have any drag. Like, that'd probably go 40 miles an hour or something. Who knows?
Yeah, no scupper holes in the trunk. Sportsman autopilot, that's my number two. And, yeah, love the boat.
Well, you promised you were going to tell us about, you know, how much thrust that thing has, and then you didn't tell us. Is it 35, 55?
It's a 45-pound thrust trolling motor. It's a saltwater trolling motor.
So what does it move you around at, four miles an hour?
If I don't have it with all my crap in it, I can cruise around about 4 miles an hour. If I load it down, it'll go 3.8, 3.6, something like that.
Bow-mounted?
Bow-mounted. And that's why it's pulling instead of pushing. You know? With that prop, my buddy Duke there in Texas promises it'll get up 4.55 miles an hour. I've got a couple in the garage. I haven't put it on yet, but we'll see. But yeah, and they really thought out a lot of things. You know, there's no front hatch, but the boat is pre-tapped for all your electronics. You don't have to do any drilling. All that stuff's ready for you. The kill switches are strategically placed all over the place. You know, the prop pin in the kill switch. The props are easy to switch out on the water. They're cheap, just like the PDL props. You can get them cheap. You're not worried about breaking the bank when you do have a mishap or something. So yeah, really solid platform.
So without the electronic motor, how fast do you think that you're able to travel with just the prop system, just your PDL? It's probably sustained around 4.5 miles an hour, right?
Are you talking about my big water?
Just the top water PDL.
Well, the top waters are slower. That's why I asked the difference. Top waters are slower. You can sustain 3.8 to 4 pretty easy, I think. The big waters, I say it to everybody, it's the fastest pedal drive kayak there is.
Which is the Predator, right?
Yeah. I've never lost a shotgun start. And I'm old and broken down.
I can't believe there's freaking shotgun starts.
Yeah, man, we have them still in these parts.
And y'all are, like, really measuring, like, hole shot and everything here?
Yeah.
Only Jeff is. Nobody Only else me. Is even racing. Only but me. Jeff's like, this is the fastest freaking boat out here, boy.
That's right. If I say it, I got to pack it up.
Anytime I hear somebody say 4.55, they're serious about their speed.
They're not poking around if they're saying 4.55. It's not 4.5. It's
4.525. I should have said that. Clarify.
There you go. All right, Ryan, what you got for your number two, man?
Obi Outback.
Now, we have a buddy. He's been on your show before. You guys know him. He's probably the only bass guy that I really can say that I know that I fish with, and that's Matt Scotch. And I know he loves his Hobie Outbacks.
He does. And
you know why? You know why he loves them?
Because he won so many. Because
he's won.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. He said that's how he started his guide business. Yeah, he had a bunch of Outbacks laying around from where he had won so many. So yeah, yep. That's why he fishes out of the Outback instead of a PA or anything.
He's had PAs though also, but you usually do see him in Outback, and a lot of what makes the Outback appealing to me is the speed. It's a super fast boat and it's lightweight. I can grab it, you know, with one arm and walk it down a creek bank or whatever. Like, to me, if I don't have a launch, if
you're
I don't
strong
have a ramp,
dude. That's 100 pound.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a 240 pound dude, so I can usually manhandle a kayak around. But you know, it's easy to get around. I duck hunt. So I think that's going to be a really good platform to duck hunt out of. Like, I can slide it off in these little creeks and sloughs and stuff and get to where I need to go. And the addition of the kick-up fins was Hobie's saving grace on those drives, because their drives were, I used to call them paper drives. Like, you know, you hit anything, a piece. Like, one of our buddies went and bought one. It was about 3 years ago, and he went through like four drives in the first year. I mean, just shredded them, we got a lot of stumps and trees and whatnot. And I mean, he smoked those drives. But the kick-up pins, I tried it out at Lake Seminole. It was the first time that I got in one, and I think that was in late January or February. And Seminole is, it's a like 40 feet of water, and it's standing timber underneath the surface. So you hit a million trees a day, and I didn't break the drive. So that's, I don't know, that's kind of what led me to put the Outback in at number two, is speed and the weight. Those are my two favorite things about it.
Now, when Matt was on our show, he told us about his first kayak, which I just remembered. I forgot to ask you guys about. But he did have a PA, and that was his first actual kayak. But if you go back and listen to our Bass Tactics episode, he talks about his first actual kayak was an inflatable, which he ended up catching some catfish, putting them on a stringer. The catfish attacked his inflatable, and he had to be saved by the game warden. So
I heard that story. Yeah.
Oh, go back to the Springtime Bass Tactics episode of ours if you guys want to hear that full story. It's pretty funny. But before we get to our number one, now tell us, Jeff, what was your first kayak?
So I've been kayak fishing for almost 10 years now. And I heard you guys mention Austin Kayak. Are they sponsored with you guys?
Yes, sir. They're one of our partners.
So just about 10 years ago, I had moved away from my boater. I fished tournaments with my father-in-law, and we moved away to a new job, and I didn't have a boater anymore. Grew up fishing out of a canoe, decided kayak fishing looked like a good fit, you know, as an old river guy back in Ohio. So I got online, started snooping around, and I ordered two kayaks from Austin Kayak. Tarpon 100 and a Ride 115 for me and my son to fish out of the Wildies.
Nice. Those are great kayaks. I don't know how great they are for bass fishing, though.
Yeah, they're solid. I flipped that tarpon pretty quick when I had it, but it's the only kayak I've ever flipped, actually.
That's what y'all started kayak bass fishing with when y'all built it from the ground up.
Oh my God. That's about all there was back then, though. There weren't a lot of other kayaks. My first kayak was the Ocean Kayak Scrambler. There wasn't very much stuff out there 10, 15 years ago like there is today. Ryan, what was your first kayak?
It was a Native Ultimate, like the, you know, kind of sit inside canoe hybrid deal. I had a 15 footer because I had my daughter, she was 3 at the time, and I wanted to get her out on the little creeks and stuff that me and my grandpa grew up fishing. So I went and bought a little tandem 15 footer, and it was pretty lightweight too, you know, easy to drag down the bank or across the field or whatever. And I entered a bass tournament here in Chattanooga in it and did pretty well. And I was like, well, I guess I'll do this for the next 6 or 7 years.
There you go. That's what I fish out of right now. I have a FX 15 that I paddle in the solo position, and I love that thing. It's stable. I can take out the kids if I want to take them out. It's I can stand up and throw a cast net off of it. I can go through the shallows on it. It's light. I can load it by myself. That's one of my favorite kayaks for inshore fishing, is that Native Ultimate. I love that thing. All right, number one. Jeff, what's your number one?
All right, number one is and before I say my number one, I'll say something I think Ryan will probably agree with, which is on any of these boats, Ryan or myself, we could go out and get any kayak we wanted to. I mean, I'm on the Old Town team because I choose to be. Don't have to be. I choose that because that's the brand I love. But we could be in any kayaks we want to. So I think that you can kind of believe when we say these are the boats we believe in. But number one is the Big Water, or formerly known as the Predator PDL. Just because the first Old Town I ever got in was a Predator PDL. I went, demoed a bunch of boats, chose that one as the one I liked, bought it. I wasn't on the Old Town team. Went out and, you know, just straight up bought it. That worked out later on, but you know, I've loved that boat ever since. A lot of people say they don't like the way it looks. Lambert might be one of them, but I don't really care how it looks. The speed, the maneuverability of it, the storage it has in the front hatch and behind me. It doesn't have horizontal rod storage, but I've never really had that, so I don't miss that. Even though I think it would be nice, but the platform is just everything I need it to be for the water I fish here. I've taken it in small creeks all the way down to the Gulf and fished in Ride the Bull out there, you know, in the past with it. So do it all boat, love it. Like I said earlier, it's fast, stable, everything I need out of a kayak.
I know Chris Castro, offshore fisherman here, he likes to use that boat whenever he gets out and wants to pedal out to the rigs when it's a nice calm day. He really likes that boat. I need to get out in one. I had the paddle version, and that thing was a damn tank to paddle back in the day. I thought it was going to be my crappie rig. I was going to have 50 poles out there for crappie with that thing, but it just paddled like a hoss.
It's a monster. I've taken,
you had a Predator?
Yeah. I've had every make model that you can get out there for a while before I got divorced. And then I figured out what was really bothering me.
I just remember you having a Predator.
Yeah, I had a Predator for a short time, man. I take that back. You know, earlier before I said that I'd never put a depth finder on anything, I put a depth finder on that. I had some crappie holes up here that I would go fish all the time, and I used the depth finder on the Predator. And by all the time, I mean in like the 3 or 4 months that I had it, which that was all the time for me. But I had a Predator. I liked it.
The old Predator paddle boats, those were tough to paddle. In fact, you can actually put a plug in this thing and take it just on a float trip if you want. And it's a monster to paddle as well, but I don't paddle it. I pedal it. And like I said, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I love that sweet boat. And it does it all for me.
I just remember the very first time that I saw one, I think it was probably around 2011 or 2012. When did they first come out? Was
the paddle drives came out in 16.
No, the Predator itself. When did
the MX and the just Predator 13 came out back 2012.
So, that's about right. So I saw one in Pierce Marsh, Drew, and and I'm like, how in the hell is that thing getting around? He's got to be getting out and pushing it because it looks like a freaking barge. It had such a strange shape to the bow on that. It looks like a penis.
Hence the name. Hence the name Big Water. It can punch the waves, punch through the wetness. Chris.
Oh, it can punch. That's for sure. It's the handle on it. I think it's that handle in the front that turns me off on the looks of it. I don't like the front of it.
I don't like molded in handles at all myself. That's just a personal preference though.
See, and I don't like those strap handles because my treble hooks always get in them.
That's a pisser, man.
that's true. All right, Ryan, what you got for your number one?
360, man.
360.
Hobie Pro Angler 360. That's my number one. Again, the maneuverability after fishing out of one, I can't imagine not having that ability to turn and chase. Like we were tarpon fishing with Matthew Van and Brandon Barton down there in Pensacola. Being able, like as a fish are moving past, you got to turn quick and get after them to be able to stay with them to continue to cast in front of them and hope they eat. But just that ability, to turn in such tight spaces, if you're fishing around trees up here in freshwater, or like we were talking about flipping docks earlier, like you can literally just work every angle on those docks. And the fit and finish on the Hobies is second to none. I mean, they really pay attention to all the details from the seats, the engineering, adjusting the tilt on the seats. Like, it's well thought out. I mean, they have all the bells and whistles, the Guardian that pulls up and down your transducer. It's, I don't know, man. I know they're expensive, but
people don't understand that. And sometimes I have to break it down for them. You know, if you go and buy the most expensive, most efficient paddle craft out there, and then you want to compare the Mirage Drive, you better buy like the most expensive paddle that you can get, which is going to be around $600 or $700. Then you add, the best seat in the world. That's going to be additional dollars. Then you
like
add
an aircraft seat.
Yeah. you add all the creature comforts that Hobie puts in and the technology that Hobie puts into that kayak. You're just not going to be able to compare to it, and you're probably going to end up spending more than what the Hobie costs. People don't realize that you're getting what you pay for real.
I like it.
Now, that was the first time you mentioned about the electronics and the integration and stuff from Hobie. Is that a huge deal for you bass fishermen that are in these tournaments? I mean, is everybody doing the integration with the electronics and everything nowadays? Is Old Town have a recessed spot for your transducer? And, does Native have it? Like, I'm not even sure if they have it because, like I said, I haven't put a transducer on a boat in probably 7 years.
Yeah, Old Town, all their models have an area for even the giant Lowrance inappropriate looking transducers that you can get and put underneath there if you want to. So yeah,
maybe. Yes, same with native. I mean, that's kind of a industry wide standard now, similar to horizontal rut. Never mind.
All right, man. Let's just go straight into, since we were kind of talking about accessories, let's go straight into our top five Yak accessories.
I want to talk about my
Okay, sorry, Chris. What's your number one?
So number one, man, Bass Yakking the Apex Watercraft.
Tell us why.
Because when I'm sitting in the seat, I feel like a fighter. A fighter from a fighter seat. And I feel like I'm...
whenever I first all the dudes in the parking lot trying to get on you?
Yeah, look, man, whenever I first saw the, and I know you don't have to keep this shit in here, Drew.
Nope, it's staying in if you say I got to cut it out.
Man, when I first saw that video, I know we're going to come back to it, man, but whenever I first saw that video, my jaw dropped, and it wasn't because I was impressed. It was because I was in awe.
Did you pay for a kayak with semen?
Yes.
Did you see that
part? We asked Eric the amount. We didn't get an amount.
The initial product launch video was one Chad Hoover who referenced that you could pay for the kayak with sperm donations. So
I did not see that part.
Well, it's because it got deleted quickly. Very Thanks quickly. The, after we had a lot of fun with it on the KBN.
The KBN Justice Department took care of that one.
All right, let's get into the accessories. Jeff, just give me your whole list. Start at 5, go to 4, 3, 2, 1, all the way down. If it doesn't come on the kayak, what are the top 5 things that you're bringing with you or throwing on that sucker?
I'll go. These three all kind of go together, but there's a company down in Florida. It's called Navarre Kayak Fishing or something like that. It makes some aftermarket stuff for the PDLs. And it's stuff that I wish Old Town would just go ahead and pick up and integrate, but it's really slick little accessories if you own any of these boats. And it's the floating prop nut rather than the one that comes on it that's metal. If you're out on the water and have to change props, you can drop that thing and you're done for. They make one that floats that's made out of some sort of acrylic or plastic or whatever. Then they also make a floating prop wrench. And then they also make a measuring board scupper plug holder. So you drop that in your front scupper plug and it keeps your measuring board horizontal inside your kayak. So those three things, very small, very pretty cheap, but make a big difference on my kayaks. And then my Humminbird side imaging unit, can't do without it. I know Ryan's not much on electronics, but Humminbird side imaging unit right there would be probably number one. I think I only named 4. Jeez. Number 5, I guess I was going to name a crate. But I'll go ahead and name my cart, which is a sea tug. It'll handle any boat. Okay. If you're in a busy parking lot. I like the detachable cart rather than attaching the boondocks wheels on the back of my boat. I don't really like that. And, I wish there was if I could put a wish list out there, I wish there was a better crate. I've been through every damn crate that exists trying to find the one that's just right. And I've got a Flambeau crate now and it's okay. I like the top lid on it and everything, but there's not just like an ultimate crate out there yet. Anyway. That's mine.
All right, Ryan, what you got?
Number 5 is a fish finder, which I run a Humminbird. I don't use electronics that much, so that's why it's number 5. If I have to, if I'm going to fish deep water, then I'll bring my electronics. But I prefer, like I said, fishing grass lines or timber, stuff like that. Number 4 is a dry bag. I always carry camera gear or, drones or some crazy stuff with me. So having a good dry bag is pretty key. Number 3, rain gear. Anytime I'm going to fish a tournament, there's a great chance that it's going to rain just because I've left the house. So I have Mustang's new real lightweight rain gear. It's awesome. I mean, it really is. Like, I don't sweat to death. You barely know it's there, and it packs up super small. My number 2 is my Plano Guide Series bag. Like Jeff was saying, I don't run a crate, and I use the horizontal rod storage. So I just have a Plano Guide Series bag with like 6, edge boxes, and that's what rides with me. Number 1 accessory, Torquedo. The Torquedo electric kayak fishing motor. That little unit will save your legs. You could cover some major water. That lithium battery they've got, I mean, it'll last all day without needing a charge. So that's my number 1.
Are you running Torquedo on that 360?
Yeah.
Oh, you got that thing pimped out then, don't you?
Dude, it's got a wrap. It's got a custom marine mat decking kit. Like, it is fly.
Does it have a cappuccino maker?
No. I drink. The only thing it gets in it is beer or white Monster sugar-free.
I like those. They make my tongue raw if I drink too many of those white ones, though.
They make my esophagus raw. My tongue's fine, but I got some bad reflux. Which I'm running on those today. That's all I've had pretty much today.
All right, Chris, give me your top five yak accessories.
I'm not prepared for this, man. You didn't tell me I had. Dude,
all right, this is our show. This is our show. You have to be prepared for our show. And I did tell you
two or three times. I'll tell you that it's always going to be the same, man. The same all the time, okay? I'm a minimalist whenever it comes to hopping on my kayak. Black pack is number one, okay? The black pack, I've got to have one. Oh, we were supposed to start with number five, huh?
It's all right, as long as you hit five of them.
We've done three of these top
I'm
five
episodes one through five.
Over here on how this is supposed to work.
All right, so black pack, an anchor trolley, a stakeout stick, a dry bag, cooler of beer.
Hell yeah.
There you go.
You guys haven't listened to our podcast, but I always rate my kayaks by how many beers I can safely have on the kayak. A PA is a 12-beer kayak.
Well, you need to try an autopilot out, sir.
You'll get a DUI, you'll get a dead battery, and then you'll puke trying to paddle that stick back to the ramp.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yes, sir.
It's like a fun Saturday night there. All right, I'm gonna go through my five. It's basically the ones Chris said, because our five are going to be different for paddle kayaks on the coast fishing 18 inches of water. My number five is the black pack, but you have to have the rod holders attached because there's not a whole lot of other places to take rods. Number four is going to be the Yak Attack Track Mounts paddle holder. I like that one because it's a lot softer whenever you're putting it in there. If you happen to be sight casting or you have to sneak up on the flats, the roller balls, it doesn't click or clank like when you're strapping in sometimes to the side of your kayak if you're using the bungee cords.
What's a paddle?
Some of us like to paddle. We've talked about this before.
Sure. Nobody liking to paddle.
Now I'll tell you this. The reason I like to paddle is because my style of fishing is I like to fish shorelines and islands, and I like to pull up onto an island and then fish, you know, kind of parallel to the shoreline and then move to the next one. I like to beach my kayak like 20, 30 times during the day. And I have a PA in the garage too, but I don't like taking the PA because I end up, you know, I end up messing up those fins because I like to beach it so much. So that's the reason I say I like to paddle. Now, do I like to paddle 3 miles back to the launch? Hell no. Nobody likes to do that. But if I can get to a spot where I don't have to paddle very far and I can island hop around through the marsh, that's why I like the native so much. But my number three is the Omega rod holders from Yak Attack. I used to be a Railblazer guy until Yak Attack with the Omegas came out with the way that they mount to your rails and you can take them on and off. And the reason I like those are because I have to completely take off all my stuff before I put it on the rack on the truck, because I load them upside down on the ladder rack on the truck. So I need it to be smooth to put up there so I can easily take off everything from the Yak Attack mounts. I used to be a Railblazer guy. I love the way the cradle is on the Railblazer, but I do not like the mounting system because those mighty mounts suck. They spin out all the time and they just don't work very well. Number two is a stakeout stick. You got to have a stakeout stick. And then my number one is an anchor trolley. I really need to have an anchor trolley because when I do stake out, I'm usually in wind. I'm usually in current. And I need to be able to position myself where I can throw, you know, along those shorelines and throw just right. So those are my top five. I saw you guys shaking your heads on those rod holders. Does anybody have any other rod holders that they like and why? Scott or Scotty?
Horizontal rod holders, mother.
He knows. No, I like Ram better, man. I like the older Yak Attack stuff, but that Omega, dude, I need Google or a pamphlet or some shit to figure out how, like, you got to twist 15 knobs and switches and turn it this way to angle. But like, God dang, dude, I'm just out here trying to fish. I ain't got time for that.
Yeah, I just like a simple tube style where I can just turn around and grab it. I don't want to have to undo anything or lean down. Like, you know.
Like a Zooka tube. You like
yeah,
a Zooka
I'm rolling with PVC wrapped around the side of the crates. Finally.
Yeah. There you go.
You know who got it right years and years and years ago, and they haven't changed their design, I don't think, maybe but once, is Scotty. Scotty rod holders are stout, man. You can't break them. And the Ram are second to Scotty, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you can't get those damn things out whenever you get them in on those Scotties. Those suckers
I don't really use them anyway, but I'm just saying.
Damn near pull my damn shoulder out trying to pull them out of the kayak on those Scotties. I've had them before, man. Like I said, I've had every kayak with about every damn accessory that you can buy until I got divorced and started enjoying life instead of changing out rod holders. The last thing we're going to talk about today is we're going to throw in something not kayak related. It can be fishing related. It can be kayaking related. But we're going to talk about like our top five travel destinations. With all of us being fishermen and being kayak fishermen, I'm sure there's going to be some destinations that have to do with fishing, but they don't have to be, you know, fishing destinations. So, Jeff, what are your top five travel destinations?
Oh, man. Well, when I saw that on your message, I assumed you meant places I like to travel to fish. So that's fine.
You can go there. I only have one place that I just want to go to just to go to. But okay. Go ahead.
So two of these I've never been to, and three of them I like going to often as I can. So any particular order you want to start at number five? Number five, I guess, would be Lake Fork. Love Lake Fork in Texas. I got a love or hate relationship with traveling there. I mean, I love going there, but it kicks my butt every other year. I'll go down there and cash a check one year and finish 60th the next. But I love going there. I love the atmosphere at the Lake Fork Marina. I love the tournaments that go on down there. I love the lake itself. And the chance that you can hook into a double digit any moment is always fun. Number four, I just got back from there and it did kick my butt, which was La Crosse, Wisconsin. I love it up there. I love the Upper Mississippi River. It's beautiful. Completely different fishery from what I'm used to down here in Arkansas. So I love one up there. Number three, the Orange Beach to Pensacola, Florida area. I'm not a saltwater guy. I still don't know what the hell I'm doing, but whenever I get to go down there, I love going out and fishing around the bridge in Pensacola, just fishing inshore in the bays back behind Orange Beach. Ton of fun. Love going down there whenever I can. Then the last two are places I haven't been, but I want to go. And that is Lake St. Clair, bucket list to go up there and fish for smallmouth. I see, you know, all these people that fish it every year and post these giants. Never had the chance to make it all the way up there. And I guess number one, or to be 1A with that, is I want to come down y'all's way and fish, pedal out to those oil rigs and fish the oil rigs. Never done that and would love to do it.
Oh, man. If you want to go out to the oil rigs, we can make that happen fairly easily. We have a lot of friends and a good network of people that even if me and Chris can't go, we can get you with somebody that can get you out there. There's a corporate. Go ahead, Chris.
He's lying to you.
I'll go.
The window of opportunity happens like this, right?
That's true. That's very true.
It's very hard
to be here 2 weeks.
Yeah, you've got to plan a vacation out here for a week at least to get one good day. And you might get lucky and get more than one good day. You might get lucky and have multiple good days.
Just a wind deal or what?
Yeah, yeah, it's a wind deal. Because the area that's the most productive in offshore fishing typically has 20 mile an hour winds daily. So you've kind of got to wait for that window. Now Freeport area is a kind of a haul, and you're not going to be able to have the species that we have in Corpus and Padre. That's, I'm assuming that's where you're talking about.
Yeah. We got to actually just have a friend that has bought a condo down there in Corpus and, you know, said we'd come down. So yeah, I've been wanting to do that for a long time. So that is where I'm talking about, down in Corpus.
Yeah, yeah. The species of fish down there, you can find a lot better fishing in that area, but it's just the wind gets really, really bad out there.
I got you.
Yeah, you don't want to fight 3-foot, 4-foot breakers to get out to where you're going. It is no fun. You're soaking wet. waves are coming over the bow whenever you're going out. But really, the only problem is, what do you say, Chris? The first 100 yards, 150 yards that you have to paddle whenever you're going through those first, you
know. It depends, man. How much drinking did you do the night before the beach?
That's true. But
it strangely sounds like the pictures I've seen of Lake St. Clair.
If you ever want to get out or you get down here to do it, let us know and we can hook you up. If we can't go, we can hook you up with somebody to go. We used to go out there for a tournament every year to the Blue Water Classic out of Corpus. And a lot of guys go out of Corpus too, because some of the rigs are only a mile and a half offshore. You can get to those really, really quickly. And some of the other ones are 7 to 8 miles offshore. And I was telling Chris, I almost died trying to follow people out that far, paddling out there in the middle of the damn ocean.
That's cool. I'll definitely take y'all up on that sometime.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. All right, Ryan, what you got? Give me your top five.
Australia, number five. I've always wanted to go to Australia just to see everything, like the culture, the crocodiles. I'd like to, you know, do a little bit of fishing down there. That'd be cool, too. Number four is Falcon Lake. I've always heard all these stories about it. So I like to go check it out. I think it'd be fun. Number three, St. Clair with Jeff. I love big smallmouth. I don't know why. I've never been to St. Clair. I've driven all over the country and I've never went and fished St. Clair. Number two is the Amazon, man. I want to go down there and catch some of the real peacock bass, the arapaima. Like, I want some big, mean jungle fish. And number one, and I'll probably make this happen this winter or maybe next winter, Los Buzos, Panama. I see all these giant rooster fish and hear all these stories about how good the food is and, you know, the culture and the atmosphere. I've got to go check it out. So that's number one on my.
How could you not say Lake Washita, Ryan? Come on.
Because I've been there, Jeff. And that's my. If you asked me a top five of places I would never go back to, that would be number one.
I was about to ask whether or not he said Lake Washita in his top five.
Washita.
No, he didn't.
All right, Chris, give me your top five, man.
So I didn't know that we were going to talk top five.
You didn't know shit about guys.
You didn't know a guy. Is he normally on this podcast with you, or did he just come on for us?
This is his. He's a co-host. You know, his okay. Right. on icon for this damn thing.
Jesus Christ. Certainly, I feel much better prepared for ours. I don't know.
I know, dude. We got our shit together, man. This is crazy.
So check this out, man. Well, I'm gonna actually go 5-1 in this
that's the way it's been going for the past three or four episodes.
And we done killed his AirPods, man. And I'm talking places that I've actually been to. I really appreciate the schooling on destinations that I've never heard of before, like Australia. But man, I have redfish fever, fellas, like bad. Okay. And I don't fish for anything else. I don't fish for trout. I don't fish for flounder. Those are my bycatches. So if I'm heading off to a destination, it's for redfish. Number five, is probably going to be the Corpus area for redfish. Anywhere from, Port Isabel all the way up to, the Neches River. Okay.
You can pick anywhere in the world and you want to go 2 or 3 hours to catch redfish.
Man, I told you I'm going for my top five destinations that I fish. All right.
Look,
and I'm gonna have one place that I actually want to go to.
Hey, Oh my god.
Look. Number four. My number four favorite place to fish.
Freeport, Texas. Number four. The place that we were at last weekend.
I was going to say Port Aransas, man. Port Aransas. I love that place. Is amazing. I love Louisiana. Fishing Louisiana. Any part of the Louisiana coast, I'm down. Okay. If you guys haven't been to like Port O'Shane, I know somebody said that you fish ride the bulls down there. Grand Isle, I lived a long time in Houma, Louisiana.
That's where I just came from, Hot Rod.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place, man. That's home right there. Grand Isle is fantastic. Forget all the other stuff, man. Forget all the dumb stuff. Look, Port St. Joe.
Port St. Joe, okay. I can get down with that.
Port St. Joe is probably one of my number – it's my favorite place to go. That's where I go every single year in April. I love fishing there. In fact, I was going to say you guys are invited for my next trip. And you know what? I fish with some Tennessee guys and some Alabama guys, some Georgia guys. They all meet down there. We all fish together. I don't know if y'all know Vincent Andrus. Yeah, Robert Brown. We're all pals, all buddies. We meet down there and fish hardcore for about 4 or 5 days each year. And we meet in Louisiana too, but that Port St. Joe spot is really near and dear to our hearts anyway. But the place that I haven't been able to fish at yet that I can't wait to fish is South Carolina.
Jesus Christ. Keep going.
Boy.
That's my number one, brother. Hey, you know what? Like I told you, redfish is in my blood, man. That's all I want to fish for. Everything else is just bycatch. Do you see me begging to go on offshore trips? Nah, I don't care about offshore trips. They're fun. I'll go take an offshore trip. But
listen, dude. You like to mess with me about being a country bumpkin and all this other crap. I'm from the Row and Conroe up there with all the hillbillies and stuff.
You're eating all
but you could pick anywhere in the world to go, and you picked redneck Texas, redneck Louisiana, redneck Florida, and redneck South Carolina.
I love rednecks, man. I thought this
Jesus. You could pick anywhere in the world to go, and you picked like every red state that you could go to and drive.
Smart. Like Marlowe said, I'm unprepared.
Hey Ryan, you need to sell this man a bold red T-shirt.
Yeah, no, we can do that for sure.
Get him one.
I'll just cut the sleeves off, man.
We ship them with no sleeves. There's not sleeves on it already.
All right, let me get to my top five real quick so we're not dragging on too long. We're at an hour now.
Clarify something for me, though. Did you say top five fantasy destinations or top
five? I said travel destinations, top five travel. Where do you want to travel to? And I told you three messages to make sure you had them this time.
I didn't think this week. I was building spacecraft all week long.
Guys, I didn't script this out like I usually do, but now I've learned that now on, it's definitely going to have to stay scripted out.
Teleprompter.
Yes, because about halfway through the show, Chris will pull it up on his computer and actually start reading what we're supposed to be doing during this podcast, and I noticed he did not pull it up on his phone this time. But, all right, my top five, I want to do a Devil's River trip. I haven't done a Devil's River trip. My cousin does 3 or 4 a year. I really want to get down there with him and do a Devil's River trip just to say that I do it. It's one of the – I saw you guys shaking your heads. I know for Texas anglers and just Texas fishermen, it is one of those bucket list things for a lot of Texas guys. Is it known throughout the country, the Devil's River trips?
Oh yeah.
So I definitely want to do a Devil's River trip. I also want to go up to the East Coast and hit the Striper Run, like maybe somewhere in New York, just to see the sights and get out there and fish something different. I've never caught, you know, a big striper. I think it's in the fall whenever they run up there. So I would like to go up and check that out for the Striper Run. And then this one has nothing to do with fishing, but since I made up this list and told you guys, I'm going to throw it in there. I have a lot of Norse genealogy and stuff, so I'd really like to get up in Norway, just Sweden, Norway, and things like that. A good percent. I can't remember what it is exactly,
yeah. Okay.
But I want to get up there.
23 and me, that stuff.
Yeah, I did. That's why I'm saying it's a large percentage. But I don't want to go to England or Wales because, like, all of us are, you know, probably 40% English Wales, you know, that are on this podcast right now. It seems like everybody that I know that's Caucasian is 40%, 60% English Wales, Scotland, that area. My number two is I want to hit up the Dry Tortuga National Park. It's 70 miles off the coast of Key West. Yep. There's an old fort there. You can only get there by boat or seaplane. You can camp out there. You can do.
I was going to invite you to Tortuga with me, but you're not invited anymore, man.
That's fine. That's okay. You can't drive there. You got to take a seaplane.
I was going to bring you on my boat, man. Not anymore.
Dude, that's a long run, man. That's a long run across the Gulf. But then my number one, Ryan, dude, I'm with you. I want to go catch some rooster fish from a kayak, but I want to do it in Costa Rica.
Okay.
It's the same. It's basically the same thing. But if you wanted to take me with you.
You're 500 miles from Panama.
Down there.
Good.
I'll go. I mean, I can be talked out of Costa Rica, but I do want to catch a rooster fish from a kayak. I think that would be something awesome, and that's one of my bucket list fish. All right, well, so before we get out of here, is there anything that you guys want to talk about that's going on with your Facebook page or any events that you guys got coming up? Or I know we've talked about Old Town a lot here, so I won't say that we need to talk about Jeff's sponsor, but is there anything you guys want to touch on before we get out of here?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, it's going to be a busy fall in the bass fishing world. I mean, Ryan knows there's a lot of tournaments coming up that are qualifiers for the Tournament of Champions. Still another BASS qualifier coming up over in Ryan's neck of the woods on Chickamauga. There's state championships coming up all around this area. I mean, there's a lot happening this fall because of COVID. Everything got pushed off into the fall. So a bunch of big tournaments coming up. I mean, Ryan and I will keep pushing on with the podcast. We got a few more things we're going to roll out hopefully pretty soon as well. I don't know.
Yep.
So a lot of our listeners are inshore fishermen. But if they want to start to get into tournament fishing for, you know, bass and kayaks, where should they start? I mean, there's so many different kayak trails out there. There's a lot of different bass trails. Where should they start to look, and what are maybe some resources that they can, you know, get in, you know, other than your page? What are some places that they can go if they want to get into kayak bass fishing, as far as tournaments are concerned?
I'd say find a local club. Wherever they live, just find a local club. That's the best way to do it.
Yep. I mean, Facebook?
Texas has several regional clubs. Go to your local kayak shop and ask who the clubs are in the area. They usually know, because that's where, you know, most of their business comes from as far as the bass side goes. So, yeah, I definitely recommend anybody starting out local with these $25, $30 entry fee tournaments. That way you're not really investing a lot. You're not really traveling that far. You meet the people that do, you know, participate in these larger events and kind of get your ears wet and decide if it's something you want to blow 10 grand on to get set up and go hit the road.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Chris, you got anything else before we get out of here?
No, I don't actually. I was concerned about the whole COVID thing, how you guys were dealing with that. Our tournaments have been shut down pretty much all year as far as COVID goes. But like you said, y'all just pushed things off into the fall. So now you're going to have a busy fall.
We've been running them.
Tournaments
all summer.
Yeah, the ones that got pushed off were from the spring when people really didn't know what to do. But all summer long, man, the BOS events have had huge turnouts. Our local trails had good turnouts. I mean, we haven't missed a beat. Now we don't have weigh-ins and stuff. It's all virtual. Which kind of sucks, but we can
top 10 or whatever will you know show up for check receiving, but that's about it.
One of our largest inshore tournaments is coming up here in October, and we're trying to figure out ways to get everybody involved in the weigh-in, because that's where we have the most involvement from our participants and their family is at the weigh-in. So it's been a struggle. It's been tough to try and figure it out, man. We've had to procure a huge fairground so that we can spread people out all over the place. And, you know,
numbers get released, it turns out that it's not near as bad as what was advertised. So I think we'll be back to normal in no time.
I hope so, man.
I think we'll be back to normal next month. I know the city that I live in, Conroe, they actually have some outdoor events with their concert series and stuff like that. They're opening it back up next month. The Conroe Cajun Catfish Festival, it's a big festival downtown that's open air. That's going to be going on. They're going to do that next month. So I really think in the next month, as soon as the kids go back to school, the kids here start school on the 8th, Soon as everybody goes back to school, we're going to forget about it. Nobody's going to be wearing masks in the store anymore. Us healthcare workers are the only ones that are really going to have to keep wearing our PPE and things like that. I think in the next month or two, it's going to be gone. Everybody said it was the election that's going to make it happen, but I think it's going to be before the election.
I can't wait, because I tell you what, fellas, this room right here, I've been in this room 10 hours a day. 5 days a week.
That's silly.
It's
I hadn't been sucked. In this house that many hours in the last 6 months.
Hey, Drew, you said you're in healthcare. What do you do, man?
I'm the director of rehab for a nursing home. So awesome. I've been dealing with the COVID issues every single day. I've worn a mask at work every single day since March, wearing my PPE to work with patients and things like that. So, you know, I firsthand have seen what it does to our most at-risk people, but I've also seen people who have had it who show absolutely no symptoms, and they're in their 60s and they're in their 70s and things like that. So I really think it's about time for us to really get out and do stuff now that we have much easier testing. And since we're talking about this, the testing was so hard to get at the beginning, but now as a nursing home, we're able to test every single resident and every single staff member every week, and we're going to have enough tests. So I think that was half of the battle, was being able to have enough tests available to test all the healthcare workers and everybody in healthcare facilities and things like that without it getting overrun. And that's why there was the mask stop on. You guys, you know, have to wear masks. Don't go near each other, because there was no way of having a bunch of tests. They're even getting us like antigen tests delivered, where we have a machine that does it at our facility. Like that's how far that we've come from not being able to test everybody that works there to a few months later, we have an antigen machine there that tests everybody to see if they have the antigens and stuff like that. So that's why I'm saying I think that it's going to really just start to fade out here very, very soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope so, too. Well, we really appreciate you guys for joining us, you know, letting the bro staff know about bass fishing, giving us your top five, giving us opinions about every damn thing. I appreciate you guys for being prepared for this and having your list ready and knowing how that we were going to go through this. Chris, I can't say the same for you. I appreciate you being my friend and being a co-host on this show. And we will definitely do this again, but I'm sure the bro staff had a lot of fun with this one. Guys, check us out on social media. Get on our Facebook. Check out the Kayak Bass Nation page. Did I get it right that time? Get over there. Talk to those guys if you want to get in. Talk to our sponsors over at ACK about some of these tournament trails if you want to get started in that. And we appreciate you guys listening to the show. For Drew and Chris, we'll see you next time.
See ya.